Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, May 21st, 2026. On the front page of the News Gazette is a photo. The headline is "Praised by Pupils, What's Cool in School, Southside Elementary." In the caption, this week's nomination for Teacher of the Week came from fifth graders at Southside Elementary in Champaign, kindergartners who started on Zoom in August 2020. Their pitch to recognize Tiffany Davis and Mindy Dyson was impressive, with fifth grader Ruby Kroll using Google Docs to organize and submit comments from several students. "I sent all the kids the document and also passed my computer around and found people to have them add their compliment," Ruby said. "I gave the doc a secret name in case they saw us working on it, and one day we all had my mom, Abby Kroll, bring up the nomination doc in music class because she teaches at our school. Kids were happy to talk about Mrs. Davis and Mrs. Dyson. The nomination in part read, "Their engaging and challenging teaching has pushed us to grow beyond what we thought we could be this year. They are honest with us, they are fun with us, and we need them to win this award as our final thank you to them and promise that we will keep working hard once we leave these walls." The timing was perfect, too. Southside on Friday will celebrate the last day of school with a fifth grade parade, concert, and promotion ceremony. This weekend, more than a dozen superstars will perform in Finding Nemo at the Virginia Theater. Asked for a word to describe her classmates, Ruby said, "One word alone could not describe our fifth grade classroom or group, but the closest thing would be that it is just wonderful." So the Teachers of the Week, the headline is "The Perfect Teachers for Us." Mindy Dyson and Tiffany Davis, 5th grade, Southside Elementary School. Southside Elementary School 5th graders Ruby Kroll and Mindy Dyson and Tiffany Davis, the perfect teachers for a class that's co-taught in a combined room. Other students lauded their teachers for their great humor, kindness, and ability to make learning fun in a nomination form that included plaudits from 30 students. "We are the kindergartners who started on Zoom in August 2020, all in one Zoom room learning with Mrs. Roundtree and Mrs. Blacker," Kroll said. "It's only fitting that we end our time as superstars in one room learning with Mrs. Davis and Mrs. Dyson, the perfect teachers for us." Mindy Dyson, "I became a teacher because I have always loved working with children and seeing what amazing things they can do. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, it is so hard to pick just one favorite, but one I will always remember is setting up a crime investigation for students to solve some mystery. Mrs. Davis and I transformed into detectives, leading students into using clues to solve a crime that was committed. I keep students engaged by keeping them busy with hands-on activities and projects. Something else I'm passionate about is art. I love ceramics and printmaking, although I don't get much time to do it with teaching in my own kids at home. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Mrs. Lewis from Robeson Elementary School. She was my fifth grade teacher and helped seal the deal on me becoming a teacher. I loved doing math and learning about history when I was a student. If I weren't a teacher, I can't think of anything else I could be doing." Tiffany Davis, "I became a teacher because I worked as a camp counselor at an overnight camp and loved the structure of organizing activities for kids, from archery to cookouts to writing letters to a fictitious rabbit named Uncle Wigglebottom. Best job ever. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is a partner project that highlights the Great Depression in social studies. Students partner up, create a garment and accessory with repurposed products, and then wear them down a runway to big band jazz music. It's an opportunity to show creativity, inventiveness, and some sass. I keep students engaged by trying to be silly, sharing about my pets, they have a great dog poop story, and balancing the fun of school with the responsibility of learning to be a young adult. Something else I'm passionate about is co-teaching. I wish every teacher had the opportunity that Mindy and I have had to work together. In a profession that can bum many out, co-teaching has been our saving grace. It allows us a lot of time to meet with students individually, take a mental break if needed, and to capitalize on the strengths we both have. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Mr. Lytle for algebra at Sacagawea Junior High in Frederick Way, Washington. He was not everyone's favorite, but he expected a lot, which I respect. I came to love math under his guidance, and it is now my favorite subject to teach. If I weren't a teacher, I would be working at a cat cafe, tending to cats, drinking coffee, and reading all day long. And there's a great picture of the two of them in a conjoined Santa sweater with Santa on the pot and Mrs. Claus in the bathtub. Champaign County Court. Jailed suspect in 2025 attack on first responders continues to avoid court. Plea and trial date set whether or not Lewis attends. A plea date has been scheduled for a Champaign man charged in a 2025 attack on three first responders, but the defendant hasn't been in contact with his lawyer to prepare. A trial date was previously set and may still go ahead if a plea agreement is not reached. Trevor Davis, 23, was charged with three counts of attempted murder and three counts of aggravated battery last September after he allegedly attacked personnel who responded to a 911 call he placed. Lewis had a scheduled court appearance on Wednesday morning for a pro se admonition hearing in which Champaign County Judge Matthew Lee would have explained what it would mean for Lewis to represent himself and discuss whether that was the route he wished to take. However, Lewis, who is in custody at the Champaign County Jail, refused to appear. According to court records, Lewis's last appearance in court was October 3, 2025. In the following months, he has declined to attend the other scheduled court dates. Public defender Elizabeth Pollock, who is serving as Lewis's defense attorney, said she has been unable to meet or speak with him at all. On Wednesday's hearing, Pollock moved for a fitness examination in which an expert would determine whether Lewis was mentally fit to stand trial. Lee denied the motion since Lewis had already been determined fit in a prior examination in this case. At some point following Wednesday's hearing, a plea hearing was scheduled for May 28th. Previously, attorneys had been preparing to go to trial on June 8th. The incident led to the charges occurred on September 4th, 2025, when first responders were dispatched at around 9:40 p.m. to the area of Neal Street and Buena Vista Drive for a call regarding a mental health issue. Champaign firefighters and Arrow Ambulance EMTs found Lewis outside drinking alcohol and appearing calm. State's Attorney Julia Reed said that Lewis said something about his blood pressure and made some suicidal remarks. Two firefighters and a paramedic began to assist Lewis when he allegedly lunged at one of the firefighters with a knife, striking the firefighter's shoulder as the firefighter turned away. Lewis then allegedly swung at the EMT and stabbed him in the bicep before turning on the second firefighter. He chased that firefighter and they fell to the ground, after which Lewis allegedly stabbed him a total of 9 times, including twice in the head. Lewis allegedly had to be tackled off of the firefighter by the paramedic, who pinned the knife to the ground and held him in place while the other firefighter joined to help subdue him, Reitz said. Other personnel on scene called for assistance around 9:52 p.m., and Champaign police responded, detaining Lewis. Reitz said he made statements on the way to the hospital about having wanted to stab officers, not first responders. I didn't want it to be them, but it had to be, he allegedly told an officer. Lincoln Trail alum to return as principal. A familiar face will move into the principal's office next school year at Lincoln Trail Elementary. Caitlin Schroeder, who attended the Mahomet School as a student and spent 9 years teaching fourth grade there, will return as a principal come July 1st. She'll succeed Megan Hunter, who accepted a position as assistant superintendent of the Rochester School District months after leading Lincoln Trail to its first exemplary designation on the state-issued annual report card. Lincoln Trail has always held a special place in my heart, and I feel truly honored to return as principal, Schroeder said. I look forward to partnering with students, staff, and families and continuing the strong sense of community that makes Lincoln Trail such a special place. Schroeder has spent the last 2 years as Dean of Students at Mahomet's Middletown Prairie, the kindergarten's pre-K through 2 elementary. She also has served as instructional coach in Mahomet, serving both elementary schools. Last fall, Lincoln Trail and Middletown Prairie helped Mahomet Seymour achieve a first among districts, with all four deemed exemplary by the Illinois State Board of Education. Grant results in community school administrative shuffle. The assistant principal of Dr. Preston L. Williams Jr. Elementary School is set to take over the top role on an interim basis for the 26-27 school year as its current principal moves to a different leadership role within the school district. Starting July 1st, Principal Danielle Jackson will become the administrator of the school's new community school program. Officials announced Wednesday. Assistant Principal Darius Hightower will serve as interim principal for the upcoming school year. The news comes as the district accepts a $336,000 federal grant for the creation of a community school at Preston Williams Elementary. This grant represents an important investment in our students and families, said Superintendent Jennifer Ivory Tatum. Community schools are built on a foundation of collaboration, connection, and support. This funding will allow the district to create an environment where the youth in our community thrive, but also provide more opportunities for the entire East Urbana community to thrive. Officials said the funds will help expand programs and services aimed at supporting students, families, and the larger community by strengthening partnerships, increasing access to resources, and creating more opportunities for student and family success. This could include initiatives such as additional learning opportunities, after-school programming, adult education and job training, and health, wellness, and social services for students and community members. Community schools bring together educators, families, community organizations, and local partners to provide integrated support systems that help students thrive academically, socially, and emotionally, district officials said. By building stronger connections between schools and communities, community school models strengthen opportunities for student success while supporting the well-being of families. The federal funding was secured by the U.S. Senators Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin through a congressionally directed spending request. Duckworth's office shared in a previous announcement that the senators hoped that the community school initiative will help decrease community violence. This will be the first community school program model in Urbana schools, district spokeswoman Catherine Tellez said. Part of Jackson's role will be to develop and begin implementing the program at Dr. Williams and then continue to grow it. Unforgotten. Like every Memorial Day, Bill Hinch's mind Monday will be on two fellow veterans he's proud to call family members and another he's been trying to track down for years. Something happened to me when I was over in Vietnam in October of 1967, the commander of Sydney American Legion Post 433 said on News Gazette Radio, powered by GTPS Insurance. I was on board an airplane. I was a flight engineer on a cargo airplane. We got hit pretty heavy on takeoff. The soldier that I gave my seat to because we were loaded to the gills, he got shot in the back. I think of him often. I know he survived, but I don't know where he is or who he was. I've got letters into the National Personnel Record Center in St. Louis. I know it's going to take a while to track all this down. I'm being patient in my wait. I also think of my brother, who has since passed away. He was in the Air Force over in Germany. He's the one who developed the pictures after the jet fighters would fly over restricted areas. And then my father-in-law, Harold Thorndike, he had 3 Army battle ribbons. He was one of the first ashore because he drove a bulldozer that helped clear the runways in the beach areas so the guys could come aboard. I think of those people a lot. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Unity High School softball players Shelby Smith, Kaylee Ellers, Karina Finischel, Miley Lofsgaard, and Kenley Harris at Mount Hope Cemetery in Sydney. Unity High had a playoff softball game to play Wednesday afternoon, but Coach Matt Reed and five of his seniors didn't hesitate when the opportunity came about to help Sydney American Legion Post 433 plant hundreds of flags at Mount Hope Cemetery earlier in the day. Calling it a great thing to get involved in, Royden Company joined Post 433 members in decorating the cemetery ahead of Monday's 10 a.m. Memorial Day service. It marks the second consecutive year students from Unity volunteered to honor veterans buried at Mount Hope. We'll publish a list of local Memorial Day services in Friday's print edition and at newsgazette.com. Senate advances 40 bills. Junk fee ban, paid jury duty, and allowing minors to consent to birth control among measures passed. The Illinois Senate advanced 40 bills on Wednesday, including a ban on junk fees and a bill allowing minors to consent to receiving birth control services without the need for a parent or other person's consent. Senate Bill 3341 passed 37-19 on party lines and now moves to the House for further consideration. Currently, 24 states plus the District of Columbia allow minors to consent to receiving contraceptives on their own, according to National Health Policy Organization, KFF. The bill's sponsor, State Senator Graciela Guzman, Democrat, Chicago, said it's about ensuring young people can get contraceptives if they need them. This is about success. This isn't about curtailing parental involvement, she said. It is certainly our hope that parents are able to be in our lives of young people in ways that facilitate access and these conversations. But as was noted in the previous testimony of someone here in the chamber, that's not the case for every single child. During floor debate, Republicans objected to the bill and accused Guzman of trying to cut parents out of important decisions concerning their children and raised the possibility that sex trafficking or abuse victims would go undetected. Guzman said she had specific experience from mentoring young people and from being a survivor of assault herself. When that happened to me, I would have wanted every single opportunity to have the help that I needed, she said. And in the instance that there was someone that was suffering trafficking and needed birth control or needed that kind of interaction with a provider, I wouldn't want to limit that. State Senator Jill Tracy, Republican Quincy, questioned whether minors are able to understand drug interactions and the potential side effects of contraceptives. It's just disheartening that we continually think the government knows better than a parent knows their children. She said, I recognize not all children have ideal home situations, but that's not to say that most do, and so this bill addresses those that don't, but it also affects those that do. Junk fees ban. 3 years after the bill was initially introduced, the Senate passed a measure for ban junk fees, which are charges added to the total cost of ticketed events, hotels, tech, and other goods and services. House Bill 228 would make it unlawful for any business to advertise, display, or offer a price for a good or service that does not include all mandatory fees or surcharges before taxes. Governor J.B. Pritzker says he'll sign it. Illinois consumers have been nickel and dimed out of thousands of dollars per year by unnecessary and deceptive junk fees, he said in a statement. I am proud that the Illinois General Assembly has passed the Junk Fee Ban Act to put money back in the pockets of families and establish fair, honest pricing, from concert tickets to online shopping. State Senator Omar Aquino, Democrat Chicago, who sponsored the bill, said it is an important consumer protection measure. It passed 46-12 with bipartisan support after passing the House in April by a vote 77-18. It still faces opposition from various retail and business groups, but Aquino said he incorporated some of their concerns. He did make changes to this bill a significant number of times to balance out the making sure that we have practices in this state that are fair, that are transparent, so that people, when they're making this really important decision of how to spend their money, that it is done in a way where it is informed. They know what they're paying for, and there's not any surprise charges coming after, Aquino said. Violations of the law would be subject to civil penalties laid out in the existing Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act. CPR mannequins with breasts. Beginning in the 2029-30 school year, secondary schools that teach CPR classes will have to provide both breasted and non-breasted mannequins if Pritzker signs a bill that will soon head to his desk. House Bill 4788, sponsored by State Senator Laura Elman, Democrat, Naperville, passed the Senate 43-13 after clearing the House in April by a vote of 73-38. The idea for the legislation began with a Naperville High School senior, Ashlyn Goldstein. State Senator Neil Anderson, Republican, Andalusia, cited his experience as a firefighter, EMT, and 20-year holder of CPR certification in voting against this bill. "I can tell you that whether someone has breast tissue or no breast tissue has no real-world application," he said. "The process of CPR, despite the amount of breast tissue you have, does not matter." Supporters said the issue involves stigma, noting information published in the Journal of the American Heart Association that says women are 27% less likely than men to get CPR from bystanders because of hesitancy to follow protocol, fueled by fears of inappropriate touching, exposing the chest, or drawing accusation of sexual assault. "If this can help bridge that gap, then I think we should move forward," Elman said. The schools could comply with the law by putting chest covers on existing mannequins. Paid jury duty. Another bill that will soon head to the governor requires employers of more than 25 people to pay their employees for time spent on jury duty. State Senator Rob Martwick, Democrat, Chicago, said employers would be on the book for the entire length of duty, even if the trial lasts months, though he added the vast majority of jury duty takes one day. This is an attempt to address the financial disincentive that exists for potential jurors to serve, Martwick said, adding it was an initiative of the Illinois Trial Lawyers Association. House Bill 4844 passed 35-20 with Republicans arguing that it's unduly burdensome on employers. "It should not be on the burden of employers to fund our justice system. It's certainly not fair, and many are not equipped to do this," Tracy said. The measure passed the House in April by a vote of 69-34. Solar-powered schools. Public schools may soon find it easier to incorporate rooftop solar generators into their buildings' electrical systems under legislation that passed the Senate on Wednesday. Senate Bill 3273, sponsored by State Senator Bill Cunningham, Democrat, Chicago, would streamline the process for public schools to install rooftop solar systems and get them connected with their local power grids. It would require electric utilities to give priority to interconnection requests from public schools and to complete evaluations, reviews, and screenings of their proposed projects within 30 days after determining their request is complete. It would also require utilities to disclose upgrade costs and construction timelines to schools as soon as possible after completing interconnection reviews. "We know the kind of dynamics our school districts have to deal with when it comes to making a budget and sticking to a budget during the course of the year," Cunningham said on the Senate floor. "It was hard for them to do that given the length of time it took for them to get an interconnection. This is set to make that an easier process, a more streamlined process, because obviously school districts don't have some of the resources that private renewable developers do." The bill passed the Senate by a vote of 56-0, and now awaits consideration by the House. Mike Hale, Records and Radio. Readers offer ideas for radio formats they'd enjoy. Thanks to the dozen of readers who would love to be radio programmers. But first, the quiz question. This is by far the hardest question I've asked in these writings. What singer-songwriter achieved an historic and unmatched milestone by writing four top five songs across four different music charts simultaneously? It happened in the second half of the 1960s. Three weeks ago, I asked, if you were a radio programmer, what format currently unavailable in your market would you like to put on the radio? Understanding your choice must be advertiser attractive and able to generate a profit within a reasonable amount of time. Responses went all over the place, like the all-TV-themed format suggested by John Bialas. There are lots of themes to choose from between network television, cable, and streaming. Some AI detective work tells me the total would be roughly 30,000. Unfortunately, I'm not sure this format has the legs to run a competitive long-distance radio race in a radio market. Cindy Kaminsky asked about Radio Disney format from the early 2000s. She and her sister listened to it nonstop in grade school. Sadly, what was a terrific idea outlived its usefulness over some 25 years. Disney had invested millions in buying radio stations in major markets and staffing them with local street teams. It's one of those energy versus results things where it was easier to focus the dollars on Disney Plus instead of running radio stations across the country. Here are some of the intriguing suggestions. Randy T. wrote an extensive idea for a 2026 news talk station with some of those features, a daily show co-hosted by a liberal and a conservative who respect each other and calmly discuss local, state, national, and world issues without finger-pointing. Just an interesting discussion, evening time comedy, new and old, and an all-night radio show like Jim White did on KMOX that discussed current events, traveling, and fun topics. You cannot find non-political radio talk shows for all-nighters anymore. On the weekends, there would be no news-related talk shows. Instead, topics would include things like gardening, car repair, home repair, hobbies, and trivia shows. Diana W. asked why not a station that plays the top 40 songs from number 40 to number 1, then back to number 40 to number 1. I would enjoy hearing a station that could keep me connected on new music that's not just the same 10 new songs played over and over on local radio, she said. Nikki H. was one of several people who brought up the subject of classical music. When I wrote Nikki back, I asked, "Are you talking the top 40 or classical hits from today and yesterday?" She replied, "Yes," capsulizing her response. She also noted announcers should love the music but not bore listeners and should be more like DJs who talk about things not related to music and share their life, and there should be no newscasts. "I know where to find the news. This station would be my escape," she said. Her parting words that this format would make money by attracting new listeners who never considered classical music. Plenty of dance music lovers would like a station that's all dance, all the time, from early Motown to now. They ask for all feel-good songs with maybe a slow song every hour. One of my early listeners went way back in 1978, Jim Pedlow, a different format each day. So a day for the 60s, a day for the 70s, for the 80s, a day for 90s, a day of classic rock, a day of soul classic, a day of country pop songs, the great female singers from the last 20 years, etc. I think that would be you would be surprised how many of us like variety in our music, he said. Radio stations and Spotify are too repetitive. Lastly, many of you asked why Oldies Radio disappeared all over the country and could not be resurrected. Oldies departed the radio landscape earlier this century because the listeners became too old, over 55, in the eyes of the national advertising community. The format got over-researched to the point where stations originally had 550 core songs playing on their stations in the mid-90s. By 2001, those same stations got researched into a corner by playing just 250 songs total. All of a sudden, stations were playing songs like Roy Orbison's Oh Pretty Woman 5 times a day, every day. Most stations eliminated local program directors who painstakingly assembled the daily music log that made Oldies work so well in their individual market, opting instead to have one person create one daily music log that aired on multiple stations simultaneously. Basically, the radio industry destroyed the format. The short answer, can Oldies Radio come back? No, although some programmers like Rick O'Dell, ex-WPGU, created a successful resurgence of a brand of Oldies called Me FM in Chicago, and Scott Shannon still has his True Oldies format running on two stations around the country. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette, Part 1, for Thursday, May 21st, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.